These days, if you want to contribute to a discussion online, there's a chance the site or the forum you're using is going to want a key piece of information, your real name. That's a change from the way the internet used to be when users could remain relatively anonymous just about everywhere on just about anything.
There are various reasons for the push for real names. Some say it improves civility and holds people accountable for their words. But our next guest says we're losing something if we don't let people find themselves in the relatively safe space of an anonymous internet.
Joining us now is Lydia Lawrenson. She's a writer, researcher, and media strategist based in San Francisco. Her piece, A More Pseudonymous Internet, appeared in The Atlantic. Lydia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. How are you guys doing?
Well, really good. So in this piece you wrote, really interesting, you tell a story about an anonymous man who ran what was then called the Goldman Sachs Elevator Gossip Twitter account. Can you tell us the story and how it got you thinking about our identity on the internet?
Sure. Well, there's a bunch of things wrapped up in this. The GS Elevator account is a really interesting example because that's someone who wouldn't have done what he did if he hadn't had access to anonymity. And he's just a guy. He's just a banker who thought that there was a lot of funny stuff coming out of Goldman Sachs and the banking industry in general. And so he started this Twitter account where he would tweet, like, real quotes that he'd heard or that his friends had heard or that people wrote into the account. And a lot of them were in really bad taste and really, like, revealed some of the, like, horrors of Wall Street in a certain way. You know, like people saying like really like awful things about women or like, you know, awful things about people who make less than $500,000 a year or whatever. And he definitely, I mean, again, he got revealed in the end and he was okay with that, but he would never have started if he hadn't had anonymity in the beginning. And that's a really good example of someone who was kind of experimenting and playing around and ended up doing something important in that safe space of anonymity. And he has been used as kind of like a banner in a lot of different ways. Like, he actually has a lot of fans who are bankers who, like, for whatever reason, look at his account and are like, wow, that makes me want to be an investment banker, which is kind of funny, I guess. I mean, it's not a reaction that I would have. But he's also been used as, like, an example of what banking culture is and kind of a cautionary tale and a banner for, like, the 99% and all those kinds of movements.
Well, it seems as though the movement to make people use their real names or some form of their real identity online has been to stop bullying, to stop the trolls who are using profanity and saying threatening things. So that's the one side. Why do you think we should make the case that being anonymous on the internet actually outweighs that concern?
Well, the first thing to say is that, honestly, that's a very bad argument because it doesn't work that way. There are cases where forcing real name usage can decrease bullying or whatever other negative social effect you want to name. But for the most part, when you have systems like that in place for a long time, the behavior comes back to the same level that it was at pre-anonymity, right? So the plain fact is people are mean to other people. People will be mean on the internet, even if they are using their real names. That's going to happen. And we know this. This isn't a matter of opinion because there are countries and environments that have forced real name usage, and they've found that after a while, it comes back to the same level. You can find articles like that. I linked one in my article in The Atlantic, or if you just search for, like, TechCrunch real names, TechCrunch ran an article about this a while back. So there's that, you know.
Well,
but even if you were to say that it was important for whatever reason, anti-bullying, accountability, whatever reason you want to name, I think the main thing is just allowing people to experience that elastic space and learn about themselves as people more in anonymity is an extremely valuable thing. It has a lot to do with how people experience themselves as human beings and how people, you know, accomplish important things in the world.
Well,
it's
you write that
experimental space because people can try different things that they wouldn't be able to try otherwise. And it's a personal space where people can learn things that they might not have had the opportunity to learn otherwise.
Well, yeah, you write that in the early days of the internet, and in your early days of the internet, it was an opportunity to anonymously try on different identities, to behave in different ways, to kind of figure out who you are or who you could be.
Right, exactly. And, you know, an important point that has been made by me and also by anthropologists and people who study the internet in different contexts is that these aren't pointless things that you're learning. You know, it's not like you go on the internet and you do something and you forget it, you never, like, think about it again. The internet is real. It's real experience. So if you go online and you manage to make an identity that is, say, like, an incredible leader in a game, right, you are learning real leadership skills that you can then apply in other environments. And so there's been a lot of anthropologists and a lot of writers who have pointed out that people go on the internet and they learn how to be community organizers. They learn how to build bridges. Like, they learn a lot of crucial things about how to exist in a community and how to affect the world. And that was certainly my experience. As I mentioned in the piece, I did all kinds of things. Like, in the 90s, I got an internship with a real game company after I had been on the internet for a while. I was about 15 when I was offered that internship. I also, like, started a blog that ended up getting pretty popular and famous. It was anonymous, so I wouldn't have dared start under my real name because it was about controversial topics. But it got famous, and, you know, I spoke at universities, I traveled, I got book deals. A lot of the work that I do right now is very influenced by the things that I learned while writing those things. And so I don't think it's really possible to disentangle the advantages that I got from anonymity out of the experiences that I could have had otherwise.
We're talking with writer Lydia Lawrenson, who says there's a case to be made for a more anonymous internet. And we want to hear from you on this.
Do you see value in anonymous expression online, or should we have to attach our names to our words and actions whenever and wherever we use them online? And have you tried this? Have you learned some valuable skills in building a community, leadership, maybe from an online gaming community or elsewhere? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with writer, researcher, and media strategist Lydia Lawrenson, who says there's a case to be made for internet users to remain nameless online, despite a recent push for real names on the internet.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Where do you fall on this question? Using an anonymous identity or a pseudonym, do you participate in online conversations, activities that you normally wouldn't? Did that go well or poorly? Do you get to act a little different? Do things you might not do otherwise? What should sites do? Require names or not? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Lydia, in your piece, you talk about how when people have their real names, you talk about, you know, the proverbial teenager posting the drinking photo online and it sticks with them forever. Do we need opportunities to misbehave online that won't dog us for the rest of our careers?
I mean, I think people need opportunities to misbehave in general, frankly, that won't dog them for the rest of their careers. I mean, it's a religious metaphor, of course, and I know not everyone is religious, but think about what Jesus said when he said, you know, let he who has never sinned cast the first stone. Like, no one among us has never made a mistake. And of course there are mistakes that deserve to be punished severely, but do those mistakes include things like drinking a beer in college? I mean, really? Like, do we really think that people deserve to lose their jobs in 10 years because there's a picture of them on Facebook with a keg? That just seems crazy to me. And I think that seems crazy to a lot of people, but people are really anxious in this, in our employment climate right now, you know? Like, people are really worried about their jobs. People are really scared about their financial stability. And it's a serious problem that everybody is so afraid, partly because of these environments where they know that their actions could dog them forever across the rest of their lives.
We're going to go to our callers now and talk to Nikhil from Eau Claire. Hi, Nikhil.
Yes, I had a comment and a question. Basically, what I'm curious about is, I know that I've been involved in the internet. I was born in 84, so I was one of the first students to be introduced to the computer class, and I was first to get my email account when emails were available, you know, Yahoo, Gmail, all of the accounts above. And my concern is that no matter where I'm at, whether I'm at a laptop, a hard top, an iPad device, that really there is no being anonymous because it can all be tracked to me. So I'm kind of curious where the concept of being anonymous comes from, because regardless, there are federal entities and other entities out there that can and are willing to track you overall throughout what you do.
All right. Thanks, Nikhil. Some good points there, you know, especially this week as we've seen the hacking of celebrity accounts. Is there really any such thing as anonymous anymore anyway?
I mean, I think it's a good question, of course. Like, and certainly there's always going to be someone who can identify you. If you're commenting on someone else's platform, then at the very least, they probably know who you are. There are a few exceptions. I know that Gawker, the Gawker Media Group, allows some anonymous tips to be sent, where as soon as they get the tips, they then get rid of all of the information that was attached to those tips. So, for example, even if they were taken to court, they wouldn't know who left those tips. But that actually takes quite a lot of technical effort and expertise for them to set up, and most places don't do that. So if you are leaving an anonymous comment somewhere, then you should think about who it's anonymous from, right? And in my article, I talk about this because there's a lot of platforms right now where people think it's anonymous and they use it thinking that it's anonymous. Secret is a good example. Secret is an app that advertises itself as a place where people can speak freely, but they can identify you, and they will if they're taken to court. The same goes with Snapchat, right? Like Snapchat just had to settle with the Federal Trade Commission because they were claiming that everything you send on Snapchat definitely disappears. And of course it doesn't, because you can record it in your phone. You can screen cap anything that's sent on Snapchat, even though Snapchat itself deletes the image.
Thanks a lot for the call. So, Nikhil, we'll go to Chris in Madison now. Chris, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I want to propose a hypothetical middle ground. Insofar as maybe it's possible that people have a permanent pseudonym, insofar as that if you have it, then people can vote and, you know, whether it's a valuable comment or not. And then there's a certain amount of notoriety or, you know, recognition in seeing your pseudonym, but it's still disassociated from your name and your actual person.
Chris, thanks a lot for the suggestion, Lydia. So a permanent pseudonym, at least within one site where you're a community member and as a member accountable for what you post and say.
Yeah, a lot of sites have programs like that. I mean, you can circumvent them if you're technically savvy, but it's definitely something that people have looked at. And certainly in my experience as a blogger and writer on the internet, I formed a lot of relationships with people where we knew each other under a specific name, you know, like people where we weren't necessarily using that name everywhere on the internet, but it wasn't our real name and we were using it a lot. So like they would recognize me under that name on one website, on another website, on Twitter. And so it wouldn't exactly be a permanent pseudonym in the same way. It wouldn't be enforced, but it was something that I did because I wanted my words to have credibility under this other name. And a lot of people do that, and I think that's totally a reasonable middle ground. If somebody really can't stomach the idea of anonymity, pseudonymity is totally fine. My concern is just that, you know, I don't want to have both of those options thrown out. I don't want to have anonymity thrown out entirely, because even though it doesn't necessarily enforce accountability the same way pseudonymity and real names do, it's still really valuable for these identity reasons and also for political and free speech reasons.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris, for the call. And on to Randy in Sauk County. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. You know, we're overlooking one possible real benefit to anonymity, having raised a large family and seen other children and so on. There's times where, especially teenagers, in their attempts where they're being pressured for something or whatever, they have no place to turn, and they need to figure something out. The only thing they can do is reach out some anonymous way. A couple of situations, either a young lady being pressured for sex or a young man trying to figure out if he's gay. One, they can't go to their parents. Unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe they don't want a big thing made of it. They can't go to their friends. They need to reach out in some way. If they have this resource of being anonymous, it's my observation, they might be able to sort it out.
Thanks a lot, Randy, for bringing that up. I want to get our guest in on this before we run out of time. This is something you have thought about too, Lydia. How does it help, do you think, people who are in need of help, of reaching out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's really crucial. It was certainly important for me as a teenager. Like, I went through a lot of bullying in school. I mean, people talk about cyberbullying these days, but frankly, all the worst bullying that I put up with when I was a kid was in person. And I went online to get away from it. And I think that, right, if those people are looking for help and looking for friends and they can't turn to people at school or at home, then the internet's a natural place to go. And they don't want those people to follow them onto the internet. And I think that, again, you can build up an ongoing identity there if you want, or you can be anonymous or whatever. The main thing, again, is to keep in mind that not all of these platforms are actually anonymous, even if they tell you that they are. And the only way that you can really be safe is if you use something like the Tor browser. That's spelled T-O-R. If you search for the Tor browser, Tor is probably the most secure way to communicate in a relatively anonymous way in the modern internet.
Lydia, thank you so much for joining us today. That's Lydia Lawrenson. She's a writer, researcher, and media strategist based in San Francisco. Her piece, A More Pseudonymous Internet, appeared in The Atlantic.